Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. We're doing this live from the All England Club. Today is Thursday, day 10 of Wimbledon. Remember, they take middle Sunday off. It's women's semifinal day. We already have one result in. Garbiñe Muguruza gets to the Wimbledon final for the second time in 2 years. In between, she won the French Open. And in between all that, not a lot. So say this about Mugu, who's now outside the top 10. Now she'll re-enter with this win. But she peaks at the right moments. Third Grand Slam final in 24 months. Venus Williams is now taking the court against Jo Konta. But I am here with our friend, podcast veteran, now a published author, Paul Anacone. Paul, of course, has coached Pete Sampras and Roger Federer, among others. One of the most knowledgeable figures in this game, former top player himself. Tennis Channel analyst. We've worked together for a number of years. We've worked together every day at this tournament. It's always fun talking shop with Paul, and now we're going to do it on the record, as it were. So he's sitting right next to me. I don't even just say we'll bring him in now or we'll patch him in. He's right here. Hey, Paul.
Glad we're doing this. We're back. We're doing this from the green room, such as it is, here in the TV compound. We should timestamp this before we do anything. Venus Williams just started against Konta. If you hear background noise, that's what it is. We just had our first women's semi. Let's start with the women's draw, since it's Thursday. What are you making?
Well, I was really impressed with Muguruza today. No hiccups at all. Thought she might get a little bit nervous, but with Rybakova, she hasn't been there before, so she never kept it close enough to see if Muguruza could get the nerves in the system. But Muguruza, so many offense plays from the back of the court, 22 winners, only 11 unforced errors. So for her, it was free sailing. I was very impressed with Mugu's confidence and also just with her steadiness throughout the match.
What do you make of a player like this who wins a Grand Slam, really struggles? I mean, she hasn't even been to a final in 15 months, and 13 months. And now after, she's took 13 losses this year already, and then she comes to Wimbledon and plays like a top five player.
Again, it's so difficult, I think, for when the players break through initially, it's about them trying to get comfortable and confident with their average level. And with Muguruza, when she won the French Open, I think there was this expectation where everything is going to be great. Well, it's not great. You have to figure out how to win when you're not doing well. And look, John, you and I have seen a lot of those matches in the last kind of 13 months. When Mugu's not doing well, there tends to be a bit of a meltdown. So now she's getting back to that comfort zone and maybe getting a little bit more confident being at the top of the game. But, boy, if she could hold this trophy on Saturday, that would do a lot for her confidence.
Imagine that. You win the French Open. You don't even get to a final. And then the very next tournament you win is Wimbledon 13 months later.
Yeah.
That arc.
Yeah, peeking at the big moments for sure.
Do you have a quick thought here? Venus and Konta just starting out. We're, not even a game in.
My biggest question is going to be, how is Jo Konta going to deal with the pressure and expectation of the Union Jack on her back? Right. And that is so difficult. This is her first time in this moment here, a semifinal playing a legend. And I think for Jo, it's going to be, how can I manage this? I actually think Jo's playing a little bit better than Venus, but Venus's experience in this arena could pay dividends if it gets close at the end of the sets.
So Venus is 37. Roger, who's the, we'll talk about in a second, who's the presumptive favorite on the men's side, is almost 36. Talk about this all the time. The game's never been more physical. The field's getting older. 20 is a new 30. But what do you think is really driving this? I mean, yesterday we had the men's quarters. I think six of the eight players were in their 30s.
It's for me, it's really puzzling trying to figure out, okay, if it's physical and taking more out of your body, how are these players playing longer for more years?
Right,
at this highest level. So it's really antithetical to logic. It just doesn't make sense. But for Federer, I know a lot of it's about managing his body and managing his schedule. And now, John, we're going to see now, what will Novak do? What will Andy do? There's got lingering issues. There's stuff going on with them. They're just over that 30-year threshold. So they want to keep going. But now those guys have that speed bump. So For Murray and Novak, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen. For Roger and Rafa, they've been amazing in terms of trying to figure out how to manage a situation, especially Roger, because he's so much older than those guys.
So Rafa gets to the Australian Open final, has a break in the fifth set, doesn't close, but given where he was not so far earlier, it's 2016, he's got to be happy, goes and wins the French Open here, loses in the fourth round to Gilles Muller, but it's a big guy who plays the match of his life. I don't think Rafa walks away with his head so low here. On the contrary, who do you worry about more, Andy Murray or Novak Djokovic right now?
Right now, I'm more worried about Novak, just because I think it's more mental what's going on with him than physical. And I'm a big believer at the top of the game, these men and women can only do what their mind tells them that they can do. Physically, you can heal. You can get through that system and you can heal. But for Novak, we're seeing a lot of signs that mental hurdle is what's holding back his consistency. Because we've seen some great tennis from Novak this year. We saw him...
First week here, even. Right?
Yeah, first week here was terrific. Won the tournament last week. And we saw him beat Dominic Thiem incredibly badly in the semis of Rome. So we know that the level can be there. The question is, can it stay there? And that's the next challenge for Djokovic.
How long do you worry a player go? This is now five... This is five majors without a title, and in four of them, he didn't even get to the semis. At what point is this worse than a slump? I mean, it's unrealistic for a player to expect to win every major. We've seen, even Roger went almost 5 years from one major to the next, from 17 to 18. But with Djokovic, how long before this hardens into something worse than just a natural dip?
Well, I think it is a natural dip. And I think the problem is that we're measuring it to what was. And what was for the last 3 years was absolutely off the charts. I mean, that was he was winning at a historic pace, which maybe arguably we hadn't seen before. Maybe Roger in the early 2000s had a similar pace. But for 3 years, Novak was absolutely ridiculous. So for me, this is a bit of a correction. And is it a slump compared to that? Absolutely. But if he's not playing in final weekends of either of the next couple of majors, then he's got something to really look at to try to get back there.
You play the U.S. Open. I mean, we talked about this in France. Do you just shut it down? I need some, regrouping and recouping, or do you keep going?
I was hoping, not hoping, but I would have been of the mind to skip the grass myself. I was hoping that after Paris he would not play here and just regroup for a while. For me, I just think it's such a great tournament, Wimbledon, and the reason that you would miss it for Novak is to see how you feel missing it. In other words, you go away, you take a step back, and you go, okay, does this now ignite me? Am I really excited to go? Or, I don't really care that much that I'm missing it. Either way,
one way or the other,
it's a great gut check. Right? Yeah. You know what's going on. And then he can go into the hard court season, which is his best surface, and be extremely motivated and ready to go. Or if the fire isn't rekindled, then you take a longer look at what you need to do.
So I want to ask you about Roger, which is something we talk about all the time. And yesterday he plays this just, frame it in amber match against Raonic, where he just destroyed the guy who took him out last year with this. I mean, the statue we were joking on the show was just comical. But I want to ask you the opposite end of the spectrum, which is, I wanted to write this week. So you're gonna double as my source here. I want to write a bit about Roger's grit. And I think sometimes talent overwhelms, and it's the running forehand up the line that gets the highlight shows. That's what we're known for, but the oohs and ahs from the crowd. But there are a lot of players who have a ton of talent who don't then alchemize that into results. Talk about Roger's persistence, work ethic. I mean, I feel like we talk all the time about the brilliance, but there are a lot of players who have talent. What enables him to get the results to match the talent?
Well, you nailed it yesterday. We got to see both. We got to see the artiste, the poetry in motion. And then that third set, we got to see the grit facing four break points, got out of that game, got down 3-0 in the tiebreaker, and gritted and gutted his way through that. So you got to see both. The thing with Roger is it looks so easy, so we forget how much he's competing. Rafa, you see the huffing and the puffing and the chugging.
Right.
And Roger, we see this guy floating around the top of the court surface where we're not even sure his feet are touching the court. It looks so effortless. But I tell you, one of the biggest traits that I found when working with Roger Federer is his ability to stay in the moment. And then once that moment is gone, it's gone. It doesn't linger. I've never seen anyone that detaches from what just happened so well in such a healthy manner. What I mean by that is he can have brutal losses and he can, in the next 10 minutes, kind of move on to the next thing in his life. Sure, he'll sit back and evaluate, but he doesn't let things linger. And I think that allows him to really play well in big moments and deal with the adversity and get through, and allows him just to dig in when he needs to. He gets focused in on that moment and he competes. But again, it's that artiste side to him that makes us look like, oh, that's just too easy. Well, he's busting his backside.
What's his work ethic like?
The best way to describe it is he's extremely strategic. He knows his own body and he knows his game so well that he's figured out when to really put in the hard yards and to really kind of grind out long sessions and to get the physical work done. Pierre Paganini's been with him now for, boy, it's got to be, 18 years or something. He's been with him forever. So Pierre Paganini's a maestro at doing the strength and conditioning, knows how to do it in a periodized way so that he comes to the majors in the best possible shape. So I think the biggest thing Roger has going for him is he understands his mind, his body, and his style of play, and he trusts that. He doesn't ever panic.
If someone asked you, if someone said, does he have grit?
100%.
Where do you think that's true? What's that coming from?
I think that's because he loves the game. We forget to look at the grit sometimes because he actually loves to hit tennis balls. Some players are driven by the competitive aspect. Some players are driven by the accolades of the result. And some players are driven by what they love. Roger loves the game. So for him, the competition, I believe, is secondary. The playing, the love for the playing is what drives him. You look on Rafa's face, to me that looks like a competitor that is a blue-collar, workman-like grinder that's rising to competition, which is a different methodology. Pete Sampras was someone that loved the challenge of trying to achieve something significant.
I think I wrote in, this was in 2008, I think I wrote in my book that Nadal likes to compete, Federer likes to perform. Is that too simplistic, especially 9 years later?
No, I mean, the way I look at it is, I used to categorize, someone asked me the difference between kind of Pete Sampras and Roger, and the most simplistic way to describe it for me was, Roger's a sportsman, Sampras was a gladiator. Pete didn't want anything to get in the way of the result. Roger enjoyed the ride that would get him to the result. Didn't mean that he didn't compete as hard, but he's a sportsman. He loves it. Whereas Sampras was like, this is what I'm going to achieve, and this is how I'm doing it, and nothing's going to waver from there.
I'll go a step further. Do you think being a sportsman and having these outside interests and going to this dinner and meeting this celebrity and sort of everything that comes with the job that Roger really seems to embrace, do you think that has the effect of prolonging things?
I think it's helped Roger because he embraces all that stuff. You see him, and we see him in the media things. He's genuinely pretty thoughtful. He's interesting. He's done this a million times, right. And he still comes in. And if you ask him a good question, he gives it a thought. It's not just the patented press a button, give you the answer. So I think he embraces that part of the responsibility of being a great athlete. And because he embraces that, he embraces this. Look at his sponsors. They love him. He's great in the cocktail party. He enjoys meeting people. He's a citizen of the world.
We've all heard these stories they ask him to stay for half an hour and 90 minutes later, he's still there. Taking business cards.
I've been there with him. I've seen it firsthand. And I just think he does that because he truly enjoys it. And he embraces it. And because he enjoys it, it makes the competition, it makes the rigors of what these athletes go through much easier to deal with.
Well, you mentioned Pierre Paganini, who I always thought was sort of one of the most underrated figures in tennis. We talk, and we'll talk a bit about this, how players' physical durability has become so important. We've seen so many players injured. We haven't really seen that with Roger. I mean, granted, he has a limber body, maybe in a way other players don't. He plays with a style that probably, militates against Siri. But I feel like this Pierre Paganini is sort of tennis's great unsung hero.
I agree. I mean, I got to work with Pierre firsthand for almost 4 years, and it was such a treat to watch him kind of formulate off-season training blocks to figure out what works and why it works, and for me to listen to him why it works because of Roger's body, his athletic skills, the way he plays tennis. And what's really interesting, John, is You know who else he works with? Stan Wawrinka.
Paganini.
Two totally different body athletes, types, right? too. But yeah. Stan has been pretty darn healthy as well throughout his whole career. And he's been able to play a lot of long, brutal matches. And his body has been holding up pretty well. So you look at Paganini, and he's able to deal with the artiste of Roger Federer. And he's also able to deal with someone that's a little bit...
The linebacker.
Yeah. So he knows how to manage body types and styles and train them so that they maximize their capabilities.
What do you make about the injuries? I mean, it was a story in week one with some of the retirements. To me, that's really more about economics than anything else. But yesterday we saw two quarterfinal matches really impacted. You know, in Murray's case, he was barely mobile. And I think we all saw him and said, if this weren't center court at Wimbledon, he probably wouldn't be out there. And then obviously Novak retiring early in the second set. Is this just, hey, listen, it's sport, it's physical, it's competitive, injuries happen? Is this something that bothers you as much as it does me? What do you think?
It's really hard to watch. It's hard to put your finger on it. My biggest thing probably right now at this state of the year when you see it happening, it's not my field of expertise, but I would love to see the impact and the analysis at this level when you change surfaces. I mean, they've just gone through the initial hard court, then they go to clay, and then clay right to here. That to me is a whole different kind of ball of wax, because you're using different muscle groups on the grass courts. You need a lot more stabilization and balance, or you're not used to we've just played a whole season of elongated sliding, longer points, different kinds of stopping and starting, and now you're on the grass, and there's a lot of different muscles that need to be in peak form to actually work right. And there's not a big buildup when you get here to play at the world's biggest tournament.
May I suggest that skipping the clay in light of what you just said makes all the more sense?
100%. And Rogers, you know, look, he's a thoughtful, introspective guy. I'm sure he weighed all of that stuff. And especially after having his experience last year where he struggled through the clay court season with his knee, and then the back started bothering him, and then he got on grass and it was even worse. So he knew what it took out of him to try to go from one clay court season to a grass court season. And so he was like, wait a second, let's maximize what I can do and do it as well as I can in the biggest moments. And that's a hard thing for a great player to skip a major. That takes, I tell you what, that is a decision that takes a lot of contemplation.
I can't imagine too many other cases where a guy wins a major and then voluntarily takes himself out of the second one.
Yeah, I mean, that tells you that, you know, his priority is the process of the big picture and not the moment. And that's why he's still playing this well, 35 years of age.
You think he wins this thing?
Yes.
Two rounds to go. I owe you, finally, congratulations are in order. You know why?
Why is that?
I looked to my left this morning. I saw a completed book with name on the spine.
That's right. Coaching for Life. I got the proof this morning.
Congratulations.
Thanks. One of the hard parts is being over here. Things have gotten a little bit of a log jam, but hoping next week it's going to be out. One more proofread, but it's nice to have the content off the computer and in between those covers.
It's a tangible object, and your name is on the spine. We're going to do another podcast when the book comes out in earnest, but can people pre-order it now?
Yeah, well, it's going to be able to be pre-ordered next week on my website, paulanacone.com. It's going to be on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com, and iRebooks, IRIEbooks.com. So all four of those places. And
I saw you got a blurb from Roger Federer.
Pete wrote the Sampras wrote the foreword. Roger wrote some nice stuff in there. We got some good anecdotal stuff. So I I'm proud of it, and I think it's relevant for people that are trying to figure out how to get the best out of themselves, and some fun stories that I went through in the last 25 years with some of the greats. So I'm real happy.
Good for you.
Thanks,
John. That's Paul Anacone.
That's it. PaulAnacone.com will be up and running in the next few days.
All right, let's go watch some tennis.
Done.
All right, that does it for this week. That was Paul Anacone. We thank him for his time. Good talking with Paul about this tournament, about the aging field, and Roger Federer in particular. Thanks to our producer, as always, back in New York, Jamie Lasanti. Thanks to all of you for listening. Always appreciate your responses and your listenership. It's always good fun to do these. We will do another one next week. I don't know who the guest will be, but we'll probably wrap up Wimbledon 2017, talk about other topics as well. Thanks, as always, for your suggestions. You can listen to the Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast here. You can order it online. You can get it wherever fine books are sold, Stitcher, iTunes, and feel free to subscribe. Again, I'm John Wertheim. Paul Annacone and I both thank you for listening. Paul's book can be purchased at paulannacone.com and at barnesandnoble.com as well. We'll talk more about his book later on in the summer. But that'll do it for this week. Enjoy the last few rounds of tennis, everyone. From Wimbledon, I'm John Wertheim. Have a good week, everyone.